Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, the Dirt Sheet, where we compile all the greatest pro wrestling news here in one podcast for the week, and then we talk about it.
Well, actually, we do two of these a week now.
Well, the Monday one isn't Dirt Sheet. Our branding is all over the map, dude. We really need to get our house in order.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're available right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson. Be sure to hit that subscribe button. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel, because YouTube will sometimes make you not do that.
True.
We're also available wherever fine podcasts are in audio form, including the iOS podcast app, where if you hit that subscribe button, it boosts our rankings in the sports and rec category, and it just looks good for the show.
It does.
You scroll through, although I noticed there's like a, I think it's like a Phil Simms podcast of some sort, and their little thumbnail thing looks vaguely like ours, the same color scheme.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, they're ripping us off. I'm accusing them right now, ripping us off, knowingly.
No evidence.
Zero evidence, though, whatsoever. You can do that these days, though. We're also available at patreon.com/Steven Larson, where you can financially contribute to the show, and in return, you get access to live streams, postcards, T-shirts, comic books, all sorts of great stuff.
We're also at Pro Wrestling Tees at prowrestlingtees.com/goinginraw.
This G.G. Allin shirt right here, baby.
Not true.
You know, he used to throw poop at people.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have seven wonderful designs, including the brand new WGPW from our video game series.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get a new design up this weekend.
Come on, man. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah. I have an idea. It's a good idea.
Get it out
on paper.
I just
need to do it.
Draw it on paper and then send it to Pro Wrestling Tees, and they'll put it up there for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about pro wrestling news.
Yes.
Today we're not going to talk about... Wait, did anybody ask in the questions about Moro?
I don't recall.
Okay. Can we not talk about Moro today?
Okay.
Although the Wrestling Observer has a really fascinating rundown on the evidently high school-ish culture there in the WWE in like production.
Yeah.
Like with... Like people not being cool and other people being cool and looking cool and then getting picked on if you don't look cool. It's a fascinating read. You guys check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
But we're going to kick it off by talking about Dean Ambrose and if he's lazy or not. Larson, what's this all about?
Yeah, speaking of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer had a quick little kind of aside, a little sentence.
Yeah.
Regarding Miz labeling Dean on Raw this past week as lazy and complacent.
Right, but that was in character.
Yeah, in character. But Meltzer had this to say, quote, things like that aren't said on WWE interviews unless there's a reason, but then they can just say that it's a wrestling promo and doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, so it's kind of a way that like the higher-ups can sneak in a jab at a wrestler.
Seems that way, yes.
Sort of call them out publicly, but being able to do it under the auspice, under the guise.
Plausible deniability.
Right. That's just... But here's the thing, though. If it wasn't something that could be considered true, then he wouldn't have said it, I think.
Well, here, you know, Let me ask you this.
Let's rewind 3 years or whatever.
All right.
Or let's say CM Punk never left the WWE.
Okay.
And The Miz and CM Punk were in a program together. Now, you and I both know that CM Punk was well known as one of the hardest working guys in the business. That's kind of why he left burnout.
Yes.
And WWE didn't take care of him, apparently, according to him. If Miz said the same exact thing to CM Punk, if he had maintained his, you know, work regiment, it would have just been weird.
Yeah.
But the kind of knock, ever since like the Stone Cold
podcast. It was the Stone Cold podcast that really started it, where Stone Cold challenged him essentially to not be complacent and have an edge.
Yeah.
But beyond that,
that was a really awkward back and forth too when he said that.
And granted, we've been, you know, I don't think unfairly critical of Dean's runs as champion, whether it be Intercontinental or World Champion, saying that by and large, there've been high points, there've been some interesting matches, some good matches, but by and large, they've been underwhelming reigns.
There's kind of been one good match. And that was Triple H. No, I'm not saying his career. I'm going to say like since his the world title reign was after that, right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think he's really. Well, didn't he have a couple good matches with AJ?
Yeah,
he had a couple good matches with AJ.
Yeah, he had a good match or two with Bray. He's had good matches. I agree. His only great matches were the TLC match with AJ and the one at Riblock against Triple H.
Yeah.
He's had good matches.
Yeah. He doesn't really put on stinkers necessarily.
Based on what we know, I would think it'd be unfair to call Dean lazy because I think Daniel Bryan said this on air, and I've also read it, that in the last year or two, no one has wrestled more matches for WWE than Dean Ambrose has.
Yeah.
He shows up every day for work, and he busts his tail.
Yeah.
I don't see how that can be up for debate in terms of showing up and coming to work every day.
I just wonder, but here's the thing, though. You and I aren't working there.
Yeah.
And so I wonder what the motivation would have been for somebody to have added this to a promo. Like, because you and I know that. You and I know that he busts his ass in terms of, like, the sheer number of matches that he's put on.
Yeah.
I remember there was a spell when, like, he was headlining the B show, like the B tour.
Yeah.
And Roman was headlining the A show. And the B show was, like, getting just as much revenue.
Yeah.
As the A show.
Like, the attendance numbers were comparable.
Even though it was in smaller markets.
And that was around the time that they, Roman got suspended and they put the belt on Dean.
Right. Now, here's my thing is that, yeah, his world title reign was underwhelming to say the least.
But it's hard to say who's necessarily at fault for that. Is it Dean? Is it creative? Probably a combination of both.
Yeah.
I'll go to bat for Dean in this respect. Based on us watching the programming, I don't know if I'd feel comfortable saying that he's complacent because we don't know what restrictions he's under in terms of what he can do, what he's being given by creative.
Yeah.
Maybe he's gone. For example, the match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Apparently, he had all sorts of ideas for it.
Yeah.
Brock didn't want to do them.
Yeah.
So in that instance, he wasn't being complacent. He was trying to do something interesting for WrestleMania.
Here's my thing about
and maybe,
that, though.
Sorry, maybe one more point, and I'll let you go. Maybe there's been other instances where he said, okay, I have this great idea. Can we do this? And they say, no.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Here's my thing about the Brock thing that I sort of just came up with on the spot.
Okay.
We don't really, you know, this is one thing I've learned in life, being as old as I am. There are two sides to every story.
I agree.
We have no idea what the Brock side of that was. So I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I am pretty much with you on this in that, yeah, he has put on more matches than anybody. And he does seem like the kind of guy who has a strong creative mind. And he also seems like he has a stubborn creative mind. Because, like, when he was on the Stone Cold podcast talking about promos, he was like, no, you don't write for me,
yeah.
You know, which is great, which I love. You know, that's one thing that I think that Stone Cold has said, a lot of people have said that, like, back in the Attitude Era, and even Vince, if you want to consider the brass ring statement on the Stone Cold podcast, similar to this or in line with this, is that back in the day, people seemed to take chances and make the most of their opportunities and really grab at, you know, their opportunities.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if that wasn't really the case as much these days. You mentioned we sort of talked about Apollo Crews the other day and his little segment on Raw, which you saw some stuff, and I went back and rewatched it. I don't see it, but what I see is a guy who has 3 minutes of screen time who isn't making the most of that opportunity. And I'll give you a very specific example within the context of that segment. So Titus O'Neil was telling Apollo Crews about all the different the ways they can exploit the Apollo Crews brand, okay, using the Titus brand as the launching pad. Well, all Apollo Crews did was give a couple, you know, this is weird, you know, head shakes. I don't think it would have been much of a risk to take the script that he was given by creative, him and Titus run it down a bit, but to get a little extra stank in there, he says to Titus, hey, listen, when you say, you know, the Apollo Cruise line thing or whatever it was, I'm going to start telling you why that's a bad idea. And then you cut me off. And that gap in between Titus's one idea and Titus's second idea can be the same amount of time as it would have been had Apollo stayed silent, but he could have said something and then got cut off. That to me would have been an example of taking a small risk because it wasn't written that way. But I feel like a guy like Kevin Owens would have taken that risk.
Oh, possibly.
Whenever Kevin Owens is on camera, that guy is making the most out of every opportunity he has. I wonder if Dean seems like the kind of guy who would do that. Maybe he's not. I don't know.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe he...
When he shows up as... Sorry, not to interrupt you. When he shows up as world champion and he's got that ridiculous tourist Vegas hat on, I always go back to that.
Yeah.
Because that to me was like, what is he... What are they even doing with him right now?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, why didn't... if he can tell creative, I'm not going to read your script. I'm world champion.
Maybe that was his idea. Maybe that was him taking
a chance.
Well,
if that's the case. Yeah, you know what? Chance. That's why they call it a chance, because it doesn't always work. That's
yeah.
a good point.
Yeah. Maybe he thought, okay, I'll do something kind of out there.
Yeah.
Something people wouldn't expect. I'm a lunatic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I can get away with wearing a giant cowboy hat.
I would just think that if they're going to actually use this opportunity to call him out, maybe there is something there. You know, maybe there's something backstage. Maybe
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
But I mean, you're right in terms of the numbers of matches, but and what he's been given. I honestly thought that it's funny because we talked about this, how creative seemed to get the Baron Corbin Miz feud backwards. How like Corbin was the one using the forklift on Dean. And I'm like, that's a crazy thing to do.
I know.
Why didn't the crazy guy do that?
I know.
But that's like creative. That's like that, you know, was that. That had to have been a creative's idea, right?
You would think so, yeah.
You would think. I mean, I don't know how much these guys book their own stuff or how much creative. I mean, I know there's like a million writers
I would guess, based on how, for the most part, Vince is very particular about promos, I would think that every segment would be written out.
Yeah, you would think.
And then apart from some people, I guess, would be given latitude to drop their own promos.
Well, let me ask you this. Getting back to the very beginning of that, the Stone Cold podcast. It felt awkward for Stone Cold to be bringing it up.
It did.
What do you think was the impetus for that? Because something tells me that wasn't Stone Cold.
No, I thought that too, in light of this story, that maybe it was... I don't think... Does Stone Cold wear an earpiece during the podcast?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
So but maybe, I don't know.
Maybe either before the show started or during the show, he was fed that question.
Oh, man. I would be really surprised if it was during the show. I'd be really surprised. Hey, Steve.
What?
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't want you didn't even be in my ear, Vince. This isn't 1997 anymore, dude. That being said, it wouldn't surprise me if before the show, like you said, he was given that direct. Hey, Steve.
Because it was at the end.
I want to light a fire under.
It
Dean's
was at
ass.
The end of the interview, right?
I feel yeah.
It's right at the end.
I
yeah.
feel like he's being complacent. Call him out.
All right, Vince, go. I'll do it. That's fine. What? We'll see how this kid reacts.
Dean wasn't champion then?
I think he was champion. I think he was.
I don't remember.
I think he was.
I don't recall.
I think he was, and that made the question all the more...
odd.
No, I was going to say...
unmotivated? Out of the blue?
Interesting, I guess, because there was something that was kind of true about it. If he was just regular dude, if he was just like regular guy, like if he was just Dean, there's really no reason to say that. It's like, well, your client, you're trying to climb up the ladder like everybody else, but he was champion, I think, at the time.
Okay,
I think. But anyways, I don't know. Is he lazy? I don't know. Like, I don't think any pro wrestlers in that business are lazy.
No.
Because they work really, really hard.
Yes.
But is he maximizing his potential? Is he perhaps not taking creative's cues and maybe they're pissed off about that? Maybe he thinks he knows better than them? Maybe he's taking too many risks?
I don't know.
I have no idea. It's just interesting that anybody would think that. Let's move on, though.
Yes.
Let's talk about Jinder Mahal. Mahal is hot action these days, Larson. So what are we talking about? Why he won the number one contendership six-pack challenge? My new favorite match, the six-pack challenge. Are you going to throw up on set?
No, excuse me. I had a lot of chili for lunch, so it's making me a little gassy. I apologize.
Can we create like a menu for you for lunch, like things that you should stick to so you're not throwing up on my set?
It'd be a very small menu.
Bread? Well, like wheat bread.
It would have to depend on the
like
bread.
Like whole grain or whatever.
That might make me more gassy.
Oh, my goodness. So anyways, according to Sportskeeda.
Sportskeeda.
Why do I always say Sportskeeda?
I don't know.
I like to add that extra stank in there. See, I'm taking risks as a character, Larson.
You're mispronouncing up. Words.
Anyways, listen up. A possible reason behind Jinder's push is that the WWE is launching a major expansion into India. The WWE recently named a VP/general manager for their India office, and the company recently opened WWE Shop India. Sports Kita speculates that the WWE is hoping that Mahal and the Sierra brothers, formerly known as the Bollywood Boys.
Yeah, but on the Instagram post WWE put up after SmackDown, I think it was the Singh brothers.
Oh, really?
I thought so. It was.
Okay. I don't know what they're going to be calling them. The Bollywood Boys.
Yeah.
They'll be prominently featured in this shop and will sell well, according to WWE. That's what they're hoping, that they're going to sell a lot of merch using this new faction. Which is, you know, it's funny because a couple people pointed to this on Twitter, saying that, you know, their expansion in India is, you know, and they asked, are you guys disappointed? This is why? And the answer is no. This is fantastic.
Yeah. Singh brothers.
Oh, the Singh brothers. Okay. Isn't their real last name Shira?
Yeah.
Sierra. Okay. All right. So, no, the answer is, I think this is awesome. I think, yeah. Look, here's the thing. India, I did a little bit of research. India has the world's seventh largest economy. And they also have, according to, I believe, Wrestling Observer, the third highest TV revenue in the world, mm-hmm. behind the United States and the United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a massive market that the WWE can capitalize on. And they have tasked Jinder Mahal with being evidently the heel face of that. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing that is so heartening about this. And I told you this off camera. It's the second part here. Wrestling Observer reports that people backstage have been impressed by Jinder Mahal's work ethic since his return to the company in 2016. And I think this is fantastic because at every step of the way that we've seen Jinder Mahal, what did I say when he first showed up on Raw? I said, push this guy to the moon.
Yeah.
Because he looks great.
He does.
And he's on some sort of, parent corner Wrestling Observer, he's down to like 218 pounds
yeah.
at 6'3".
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just muscle.
Yeah.
It's just muscle there. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah,
I
me
think
too.
If this guy is doing it through diet and like exercise, like clean living, all that kind of stuff, and he's like the hardest working guy in the gym,
yeah.
which if you look at his physique, it's entirely possible, then what more do you want?
I know.
You know? And
know.
It's like when he cut that promo, it is obvious this guy had worked on his skills. Obvious. He looks like $1 million.
Yep.
And here's another thing, too, is that one of our friendos on Twitter, and I apologize, I really need to
write this stuff down,
credit this stuff, sent us a Randy Orton interview.
Oh, did you watch that?
On the radio, yeah. And it was great. He was just saying, he was talking about the frustration with the WWE pushing guys and then letting up on the gas.
Yeah.
And he credited Jinder Mahal. He said, this guy looks amazing. He's tall. He's got all the skills in the world. And they started to push him, and then they let off on the gas. And he said, I have no idea, because it was from years ago. He said, I have no idea why. He said, but it's really frustrating. And so this makes me think. I said there was no chance, and I still think there's no chance that Jinder's going to win that title. But it's moved up from like 0 to like 2.
Yeah.
2% chance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially given the response that he's got.
I know.
And if they want to make an expansion into India, add him to the lineage.
Yep.
Put the world title. You have a universal title. You can put the world title on him.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Or at least maybe the U.S. title. If they really want Baron Corbin to be like the heir apparent in terms of like top heel.
Yeah.
That's totally fine. Kevin Owens versus Jinder Mahal. You know?
About a week ago, Sports Kita as well had an article saying that the WWE had plans to make Jinder Mahal, you know, I think as they put it in their report then, top mid-card heel.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I guess, it's, you know, if that's still the goal.
Well, if you see how they're booking the world title, you kind of see how he is top mid-card heel at this point.
You know, the first step is having him win that match, vie for the world title
mm-hmm.
against Orton. So win or lose, he's still,
mm-hmm. oh yeah,
you know, towards the upper half of the card.
Yeah.
And get a couple really good feuds after mm-hmm. that established.
Yeah.
Good mid-card heel. And then from there, he can go further.
Yeah.
Or if he wins the title at Backlash, then he's top of the card right then.
Yeah.
Give him a good, you know, run, 3, 4, 5 months maybe.
Yeah.
Some good programs. That could be interesting.
No, I know. I absolutely agree. And it's, you know, what's funny too, and I'm totally going to eat my words here. You know, it's just a matter of being, of recognizing when a change has been made that suits my, as a fan, my personal like enjoyment of the product.
Yeah.
My knock on the Bollywood Boys was what?
They look too nice.
They look like nice guys. That Instagram post where Jinder Mahal was laying out some nefarious plan in the palm of his hand. and they're standing off to the side, like with a couple buttons undone. They look cool as fuck. They looked really cool. Yeah. I was like, I didn't know these guys could look this cool because they just come off as the nicest guys on NXT.
Yeah.
But then I saw them in that Instagram picture, and I'm like, they look like a nefarious, villainous group, and I'm scared of them now. That's awesome. He's doing that. I don't know what this means. He's like, you be here, and then I'm going to be here with the world title. Oh, I think it's great.
Yeah, it is great.
Stars in the making, man. I think that's what it should be. It should be guys taking advantage of opportunities. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. Here, man. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And by all accounts, Jinder, since he's returned to WWE in 2016, has been taking advantage of opportunities, and now he's getting a huge opportunity.
Look, man, whatever profession you're in, if it's a profession you actually want to be in, if you're the hardest working guy, there's a good chance you're going to go far.
Yeah.
Across the board. Next up, this is really interesting because this completely flies in the face of something that I believed, and I'm happy to be wrong about this. WWE looks like they are actually negotiating with Anthem to get the broken IP, to get that fully in their camp, and because they believe that the broken universe, the broken Matt Hardy, Brother Nero, can make the money.
Yep. So this story kind of started rolling on Monday when Wrestling Observer Radio reported that WWE was trying to negotiate a deal with Impact that would allow Matt Hardy, I believe, just Matt, to use his broken character on WWE TV. And then Daily Wrestling News, a couple days later, confirmed Wrestling Observer's report saying that the aim is to transition into the broken universe after the Hardys lose the tag team titles. And that WWE is looking to strictly buy the broken IP outright. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so like one payment, done.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about paying Impact royalties or licensing fees or any sort of future merch money.
Right.
And, you know, throughout this last, I mean, especially since he's come back, but really seemed like the last couple of weeks, Matt Hardy has really been having fun
yeah.
with his character on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, predominantly he's still been broken Matt Hardy. For a couple of days he was torn Matt Hardy.
Let me ask you something about that. Speculate. Do you think the torn Matt Hardy was his way of saying to Impact, we can do this with or without you?
That might have been a subtle message, but all, you know, last 2-3 weeks, you know, he'll I can't remember where, but I saw an article where he put two posts that were, it was like him saying, okay, we're going to be at these live events this weekend. Mm-hmm. And he did it as, you know, Matt Hardy V1.
Mm, yeah, that's
and then
right. Yeah.
Again, as broken Matt Hardy. Yeah. And someone asked him about it and said, oh, there's conflict within my vessel.
That's great.
And that's what I associated the torn thing with, because he changed it around the same time. He put up this GIF or video that someone did. You remember back when he was Matt Hardy V1, mm-hmm. he had like the real player looking mm-hmm. thing where he'd run his entrance through.
Yeah.
And so it was going through various characters in his career.
Yeah.
And he responded to that like there was my Numas in conflict or something like that.
Okay.
Something like that.
No, I saw the GIF. It was great.
Yeah.
It was
fantastic. So he's having fun with it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I wonder, in his promos, by and large, he's just Matt Hardy. But every once in a while, mm-hmm. he'll slip in some broken Matt Hardy into his promos, and he's still been doing the delete.
Well, here's the thing, dude. Is that
so? The avenue is there by which they can transition to broken Matt Hardy. It's there.
He could conceivably, and I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the legalities of it.
Yes,
he could conceivably advance his storyline into a next evolution of the broken character and be completely free of legal ramifications.
Yeah.
Because if he just comes up with something new, like torn or something like that, and then just don't say the word broken at all.
Yeah.
It's just be the next step with some fresh ideas. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, look, the broken universe is great, but we want what's after that.
Yes.
We want the next thing. We don't want just to rehash the old stuff.
No.
We want the next thing. And so, you know, he could go down that route, but it sounds like, you know, WWE just wants to straight up look. We want to be on safe ground. We want the broken shit. We want to sell a shirt. This is hashtag broken. That's what we want to do because we know that'll sell a lot.
I know. And hopefully along with that is Matt Hardy getting some creative latitude.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Because
kind
of coinciding with the story, Sportskeeda and other outlets have had reports saying that Vince is looking to give Jeff Hardy's a major singles push, and that it initially he wanted to happen, I think the report said 12 months ago he wanted, even then, to bring Jeff in back to WWE for a major singles push, but not sign Matt at all. This
must
all predate the broken stuff.
Yeah.
Or around
the
beginning.
No, I remember that. Yeah,
But given the success of the broken universe, not only in TNA, but also since they've come back and everybody's still chanting delete,
mm-hmm.
It sounds like After they drop the tag titles, if these reports are true, that they will break the Hardy Boys up, Matt will be broken Matt as a singles competitor, and Jeff Hardy will do a singles run.
Mm-hmm.
And these reports suggest that that Vince is interested in having him in feuds against Finn Balor,
mm-hmm.
which would be great,
mm-hmm.
and Brock Lesnar.
Which is interesting.
Yes.
This is really weird.
So I guess if you we're assuming Braun is going to be Brock's opponent at SummerSlam.
Vince must love Jeff Hardy.
Well, I was I think the Sports Keto article said that in 2009 Jeff was the number 2 merch seller before he left.
Wow.
Behind Cena, I think.
Yeah. He was over, dude.
I know.
He was over. I mean, I wasn't really watching back then, but I always remember keeping sort of one eye out on the mm-hmm. product anyways and being like, "Oh, that's cool. He's like world champ. That's cool." And then like I think that's when his personal problems sort of caught
yeah.
up with him.
Yeah, that's when he left, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's crazy. I wonder, I mean, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it'll be Jeff Hardy versus Brock if they want to go that route for Survivor Series.
Maybe. Oh, you think this year?
Maybe. I mean, the thing all these reports mention is that WWE is not going to do anything broken until
mm-hmm.
A deal with Impact is in place.
Right.
Until then, I think Brian Alvarez on Wrestling Observer Radio said that, you know, like that gimmick is done
mm-hmm.
unless WWE and Impact can reach a deal.
Yeah. Huh. That's interesting.
Well, so I mean, it sounds like WWE doesn't even want to try doing anything similar to it whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
But so going back to your point about the evolution, yes, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see a rehash.
Mm-hmm.
And for a moment, I thought that's what the Torn thing was going to be, that Matt was going to vacillate between all mm-hmm. his various alter egos.
Yeah.
And, you know, that way he can just kind of hint at all of them without...
Right, exactly.
Being just one, you know?
Which there's a rich history in pro wrestling of doing that anyways, yes. you know? Straddling that.
It'd be kind of like, you know, a kind of meta take on mm-hmm. on gimmicks
mm-hmm.
as a whole. So
yeah. Yeah, there was also, now I'm trying to remember the source of this. The Young Bucks had an interview where they talk about how they were, and we'll source it, I'll find it and source it in the description, where they talk about being pissed off at Impact for impeding their storyline with the Hardys.
Yeah.
But they also said that it was such a joy to work with them that they literally went to an empty building. They all got on top of a ladder, like their own ladders, and plotted out the match from there.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
That's really cool, actually.
So yeah, no, it's going to be very interesting. Hopefully Impact will play along, but it's Impact.
Yeah.
Impact doesn't usually do what's best for them.
No.
I can't wait till we see pixelated ref face.
Oh, dear.
Just that's a reference to in the Wrestling Observer also. Meltzer talks about there's a little blurb about Impact Wrestling and their current contractual kind of issues with like Lucha Underground. Lucha Underground has like the most ridiculous contract stipulations like ever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You can't appear
on TV American like months television. After.
Yeah, I think for several months after the season ends.
And they film so far in advance, so you're just like screwed the entire time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why anybody.
Well, that's why, that. You know, there's, you know, with when Ricochet, his contract ended, people are like, oh, when is he going to come to WWE?
Yeah.
And I think Meltzer and other sources says maybe 2018.
Yeah. Not anytime soon. And so like Impact, there was some thing in there about how Impact might
Impact has deals with, AAA
mm-hmm. and the crash
Conan's promotion. Yeah. And then, AAA said that, wrestlers signed to Lucha Underground could appear on Impact, but not using their Lucha Underground
right.
gimmicks.
Right. And so apparently there had been several matches already filmed that they now cannot use because they would impede on the Lucha Underground contract. And apparently there was one match where a ref that was under contract from Lucha Underground appears and they might have to digitize him, which I would think means pixelate his face.
Yeah, that's crazy that the contracts extend to referees as well.
That is weird.
That's crazy.
Absolutely crazy. I hope they're paying a ton. I hope that's why Lucha Underground is losing money hand over fist because their contracts are
when
so
Ricochet's
good.
Contract was up, I read that they offered him like the richest non-WWE
oh, really?
Contract, yeah.
That's
in the States, I thought that's what it was.
Wow.
Like they were going to pay him.
I remember
they're
going
to pay Ricochet a ton of money to stay with Lucha Underground.
Yeah. Man, maybe that's why they, I mean, if you think, yeah, we're going to prevent you from being on TV for
basically a year.
For basically a year. They better be paying out a ton, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. which could be why. I mean, you would think like with their setup, like they wouldn't be spending that much money, but maybe it's a lot of it in the contracts. Like, well, it's not always, just they're bringing freelancers.
We've always heard that wrestling is got a lot of overhead to run a wrestling promotion. It's not really a money-making endeavor.
But you're filming like an entire season over what, like a...
Well, I'm sure they do...
In terms of the matches?
Yeah. I don't know how often they have tapings, but I'm sure that, you know, they shoot 4 episodes per mm-hmm. per taping.
Yeah.
Like NXT and Impact does.
How many episodes of Lucha Underground per season are
there? Oh, like 30.
Oh, really? That
many? Yeah, they're long.
Oh,
I thought it was like... super long.
Oh, wow. I thought it was like 12. Mm-mm. Oh, wow. Okay. Gee willikers. Wow.
Yeah, the second season's really long.
That is long.
But then, you know, not every wrestler is on every episode.
Oh, right.
You know, so a talent might have 8 to 10 matches per season,
mm-hmm.
maybe. Just yeah. throwing that number out.
Yeah. All right, Larson, you ready to open some mail?
Sure.
Because I have a box here and you have a tube there.
I do. Oh, my goodness.
This is from Jacob Barnes.
This is from Captain Marvelous.
The Captain Marvelous? From Parts Unknown?
Well, there's no the. It just says Captain Marvelous.
Oh, wrong guy then.
Oh, nice.
Here we go, from Jacob Barnes. Hey, Rendos. Scott Steiner's favorite bastard, Jacob Barnes here, formerly Broken Jacob Omega. Should I go back to that name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I decided to...
Sorry, that was loud.
Anyway, I decided to order a few shirts for you guys
oh,
wow. on WWE Shop, so thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, cool. Hopefully you guys get this package before Mania so that you can rock them during Mania weekend. I don't think we got it before Mania. Larson, I know that you and Steve are big AJ Styles marks, so I purchased an AJ shirt.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Oh, those are, that's a good looking shirt.
Steve, I purchased a Baron Corbin shirt for you because I remember you said you wanted one from a podcast a while ago. Also, so I could say, because Baron Corbin, there's also a New Day shirt in there for both of you because New Day rocks. Anyways, you guys make my days a lot more interesting. I listen to your guys' podcast on my commutes to school and work, and it truly is a highlight of my day when I see that there's another upload from you guys. You guys make wrestling more entertaining and kept me watching the sport that I love. Without you guys and the rest of the Friendo community, wrestling would be boring. None of my friends watch wrestling, so being able to ask you guys questions and listen to you guys talk about the business is really great. Thank you for all that you guys do. Keep up the good work. The Friendo community and the Going In Raw podcast will only get bigger. I look forward to being a part of the expansion of your fan base, and I hope to meet you guys somewhere down the line. Best regards, Jacob Barnes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's so nice.
What we got here. Phenomenal one shirt for you.
Cool.
Because Baron Corbin for me. Look at that shit. That's rad.
Awesome.
Very happy about that. And we each got a couple of New Day Rocks shirts, man.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's so nice. You got to take your shit home, man.
I did. I took
Sometimes
my stuff home last time.
Sometimes you leave, like, your Tupperware here.
I know. So this is from Captain Marvelous. I think I know what this is.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Holy crapola. That is huge. We are there. I think that's us there.
Yeah, that's us right there.
Here, I'll hold one end. You hold the other.
Yeah, this is a huge poster from Captain Marvelous.
He did a drawing of, like...
Signed right here, too.
Oh, it's like right... nice.
That's so cool. Oh, it's not right here.
And then where are we on the poster?
We're over here.
There we are. Look at that.
It's like signed over there, too.
Huh.
Hold on. Let me see if there's a note. That's from Flair. Okay, here. Grab that. I'm going to see if there's a note inside the tube.
He got a couple signatures to sign the original artwork, it looks like. He's got a Kofi over there. And then so, like, the audience here is all, like, wrestling fan YouTuber guys.
Yeah.
I think. We're here. That's cool. I wonder if Grimm's on here. Oh, there's King Ross up there.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I recognize him. I need to learn more YouTubers. I don't know who all's on here.
Thank you so much, Captain Marvelous.
Yeah, thank you. That's really
That's
cool.
Awesome.
We got to put this up. Maybe we
have to refashion our set here.
Start putting new stuff. We have so much stuff. We got to put some new stuff
up. Some of this
up.
Stuff is years old.
I know. That's what we gotta clean
here,
house.
Give me that back. I'll put in the tube since that's
I'll
good.
I'll just put it there. It's fine. It's all good.
All right. Let's answer some questions.
Daniel El Rudo, do you guys...
Oh, sorry.
Do you ever think we'll be in an age with no monsters like the Lesnars or Big Shows or Strowmans? Don't get me wrong. They can be utilized correctly at times, but I'm thinking more of having an even playing field for with wrestlers. No, I think there's always going to be monsters. Triple H recently said something along the lines of he wants somebody for everybody.
Yes.
And so he wants a wide variety of wrestler. And on top of that, like, you know, monsters are a time-honored tradition. Climbing that monster, metaphorically speaking, is often makes for really great stories yep. for smaller wrestlers.
Yep. Especially when the face can conquer the monster.
Yes.
Usually that means huge pop
mm-hmm.
and huge gates.
Correct. Big money.
Yes.
To be made there.
The illustrator of Silence, Carter Severn. Howdy, howdy. Seeing as Jinder is now number one contender with the help of the Bollywood boys, can you see Carlito returning to join the Colognes and make the Colognes a trio?
Trio.
Personally, I'd love to see Carlito return and join the Colognes, but if Shelton joins American Alpha, then that'll be four trios on SmackDown, and that seems way too crowded. Thoughts?
Way too not crowded. That's amazing. That all the fantastic. More trios, the better.
Exactly.
I like Carlito, man.
I have an apple. I'm going to spit it in the face. People don't want to be cool. I spit in the face of Mauro Ranallo because he does not want to be cool.
You think he did that?
No.
No, I don't think he did either. He's not even there. 1998 Oreo Dunk Champion Kamal Vaughn. Hey, friendos. First time patron here.
Thank you very much.
Recently, my biggest pet peeve with the WWE has been when a wrestler's pay-per-view opponent awkwardly stands in the locker room to watch their match on TV. What do you think they could do to better lead to a match?
I had an idea.
More dramatic presentation.
So that's what we do. So instead of doing it live like this.
I like that you're inspired immediately.
Oh, as soon as I saw this question, I had an answer for it.
Okay, great.
So the following week after, let's say it's, I'm just using this as an example. It's Jericho Owens.
Okay.
And, you know, one week on TV, Owens is backstage watching Chris Jericho's match against Samoa Joe.
Okay, good.
The next week, we go to Kevin Owens. He's at home.
Okay.
He DVR'd Raw. And so he sits there and does a breakdown of the match and goes bit by bit, beat by beat, of what Jericho did wrong.
Then
criticizes him, probably harshly.
Oh, I like it.
For, you know, how he didn't wrestle correctly.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
No, I like that.
That way there's a story being told rather than just someone standing next to a giant monitor.
Standing there. Okay.
That bothers me too. I don't like that.
Yeah. I would be okay with it is if they're like, no, you know what I'd like to see? So match is happening. Jericho, Samoa Joe. Cut to Kevin Owens playing 2K17 Jericho against Samoa Joe.
Mm.
So he's playing out how he thinks it's going.
How about even better? Computer versus computer. It's a simulation.
He's watching the simulation. that's a good one. See, collaboration.
Yeah. Right. Teamwork.
That's good.
You have more?
No, that's good.
All right, Roppongi Knights. I know a lot of people are somewhat upset that Jinder is getting this push for a world title match.
Those people are obsolete.
But look at the past few years. He got released from WWE in 2014 and re-signed shortly after the draft last year. He's been a jobber, and now he is a main event title. Oh, sorry, in the main event title picture. Seeing his sudden push, who would be someone that has been released that never really got a push you would like to see come back and get a similar push? He suggests Wade Barrett, because he was pushed briefly, but then not so much after that.
Wade Barrett's probably one of the only names I can think of that if he came back in like the same physique. It's funny, I saw like a side-by-side of Jinder Mahal then and now. And yeah, he has like the change was a lot more dramatic than I originally thought, because he was just like thin guy, like tall, thin guy.
You mean during his first run?
When he was with the 3-man band.
Yeah.
And then he came back and he's just amazing looking now. If Wade Barrett did something kind of similar where his body was just amazing, because towards the end, he just kind of looked like fit guy. He wasn't like big or anything.
He never was big, though. He never was exceptionally muscular.
When he was on NXT, he seemed beefier.
Could be.
Yeah, he seemed bulkier.
I'll give you a name, and this person is actually already re-signed with WWE. Drew McIntyre.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
When he comes back up to Maine, he's going to be a massive star.
Mm-hmm.
Massive.
Simon Gotch. He's going by Simon Grimm now.
Mm-hmm.
You think he's a fan of our friend Grimm?
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
He spells it with two M's.
Two M's, correct.
Like the Grimm brothers.
You think they should get into a fight?
Grimm's Fairy Tales.
Get into a feud over
are
the
they
name
brothers?
Grimm.
Was it Grimm?
The
is brothers Grimm,
Grimm and Simon
Grimm? Oh, brothers Grimm. Yeah, they were brothers. Sorry.
Yeah. You're thinking of the brothers Gibb.
No, the brothers Grimm. They wrote all those all those fairy tales.
You're thinking of the Brothers Gibb.
I like the Bee Gees.
So do I. They're real good, yeah. Yeah.
Drew McIntyre.
Drew McIntyre is the man.
Mr. Lipkin, what role do you see Undertaker having with the company now that he's retired? Personally, I'd love for him to take a position at the Performance Center. He's one of the greatest talents of all time, and he was always looked to in the locker room as a leader. Seems like he'd be a perfect mentor to the next generation of superstars.
I don't think we're ever going to see the Undertaker again. We'll see Mark Calloway.
We're not going to see him again. Did you see the that video?
We'll see him one more time because he's going to go into the Hall of Fame.
You see the video shout out he did to George Strait? I really love your music. It's like, bro, you're one week removed from being retired. Can you just give us a little bit more space? No,
like I said, when he put those gloves, that jacket, and that hat in the middle of the ring, that was the end of The Undertaker.
Dude, give me at
he
least,
is now Mark Calloway.
Can I have a month?
No.
Can I please have? It was like 3 days later.
Good for him.
George Strait.
He's getting on with his life. You. He's not a mark for his gimmick.
I love your music. You're killing Cave. I paid how much money for that WrestleMania ticket, and you're sitting here talking about George Strait? At least give me a month.
You know what you could do?
What?
Not pay attention to it.
Hey.
I
have to. It's my job to pay attention to it. All things wrestling. George Strait, your legacy.
Connor, say yeah.
Yeah.
O'Farrell. Hey, friendos. Hi. I was thinking about what would have happened booking-wise had Finn not gotten injured at SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you guys think he would have feuded with through to Mania, and would he have held on to the Universal title till Mania? Thanks, friendos. I think once Goldberg decided to wrestle more than one match, regardless who had the Universal title, that was going to be the story going into Mania.
You think so?
Yeah. Because I remember hearing that the original plan for Finn was to get in a feud with Kevin Owens, had he stayed healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to still do Goldberg-Lesnar, they could have had essentially Owens be a transitional champion.
They could have done, you know what they could have done, though? They could have done, let's face it, that WWE title was completely bungled heading into WrestleMania. They could have found a way to do a switcheroo somehow, some way.
Yeah.
Maybe made that Goldberg. Because I think they really thought, maybe still think, that there's a lot of money in Finn. And so maybe that could have been switched up somehow, where he kept the Universal title heading to Mania, and then maybe Goldberg Lesnar was for the WWE title. Maybe not. I don't know. Because that's kind of a conundrum right there. It's like, man, we've got this guy who, because I think Finn does pretty good in merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
We have this guy who we really want to push, but then we have these part-timers who are like, you know, casual fan, lots of money there. What do? We have two giant belts.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them maybe doing that. I don't know if they would
they still could have done that and allowed Owens and Jericho to feud over the Universal title, and they didn't.
Yeah, but Jericho's not Finn.
I understand. But he's also Chris Jericho. He's one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I know, but he's part-time. He's going to be gone. Like, Finn Balor is a guy they want to build around.
So is Kevin Owens.
No, the comparison is Finn Balor, Chris Jericho.
I know.
That's the other piece of that puzzle.
But it depends who Finn Balor would be fighting. If Finn Balor was fighting another part-timer at Mania, then it's analogous.
I don't know what you're talking about right now. You lost me.
I might have lost myself.
That's okay. Let's move on.
It's been a long day already.
Tyler, one time. I know we still have another podcast.
I know. We have a lot left to do.
Tyler, we needed like a project manager around here. 1-2 sweet kid whack. Can we just start doing, something remotely? Do all count outs remotely.
I feel like that's a show we need to be here in
every
person
time
for some reason.
I'm here and then you're in a different location.
Okay.
But every time you're in a different location, you have the going in raw backdrop.
So no one can tell? That just sounds like more of a pain in the ass for me. You just want to make things difficult for me.
You go out near like the sunrise and like you just hear cars going whizzing by. Hey, Steve! Steve, number what? Eight? Eight!
That might be the worst idea you've ever come up with.
It's pretty bad.
It's really bad.
He's a Tyler, 1-2 Sweet Kid Wagner, was listening to the latest Edge and Christian podcast. And they were talking about how Michael Hayes came up with the original House of Horrors match, and it was meant to be a pre-filmed match shot like a movie between the Brood and the Hardys. Really? That's cool. Hearing this got me a bit more excited for the Bray Orton match. Aww.
No, I don't want to be pre-filmed because we're going to
Tyler,
be there.
Tyler, it's not going to be good.
We're going to be at Payback, and I want to watch a whole match on the Titantron.
Oh, that's a good point.
I paid money to be there. I want to see that match in person.
Okay, but okay. No, here's the thing, though. I would definitely agree with you if I thought the match was going to be any good. We know who's going to win, and we
Now that it's not for the title, we don't know who's going to win. It's not for the title.
No, I know that. Do you really
think Bray can win? Yeah, Bray could win.
What are the odds in your head?
60-40, Randy.
Really?
Yeah.
That high?
Yeah.
You've gone crazy.
Nope.
Oh.
If they want to send Bray off to Raw looking anything close to... No,
they
I know.
They don't care!
It's strong.
They don't care!
Then
it's
Bray 70-30. Needs to win it.
No, 80-20 probably. 60-40. Have you looked at the betting odds?
No, I don't think they're out yet.
You've gone crazy.
No.
60-40.
Once I saw it wasn't for the title, I was like, okay, well, I mean, Bray's in it.
They don't care what happens to Bray Wyatt.
They should.
Somehow, some way. Yeah, they should. For years now, they should. They obviously don't.
Randy Orton could lose for 2 years in a row, and people still cheer him.
You know that, and I know that, but Vince McMahon doesn't know that.
I'm sure he does.
He probably does, but he doesn't care. He doesn't want. He's not going to have Randy lose. Are you kidding me?
We'll see.
House of Horrors, man. Yeah, I want to. You know what? I'll be honest. I'd rather see a movie. I'd rather see a movie. Let me ask you something. Would you rather see like a really, really cool high production movie like the Broken Universe thing?
Hold on,
wait. Or that crap we saw at WrestleMania but live?
Here's the thing. We would see neither of them because we would see something like those Bray Wyatt interviews of late that are super over-edited.
Oh, I'd be fine with that.
Visual
I've
diarrhea.
I've said this before. I would totally watch a movie of that.
Visual diarrhea.
If it had a beginning, middle, and end.
For 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
That would give me a headache.
Really?
Yes.
Would you be like me? Would you turn to me and say, I'm miserable right now?
That'd be my merch stand match, I think, if it were a movie.
You know what they all need, the WWE needs at those live events, especially they're going to do like a seven-hour one, is like a hammock room. Like a room.
A nap room.
A bunch of hammocks.
Nap room, yeah.
Yeah, like a big hammock room. All hammocks.
Or at least have padded chairs if you're sitting on the field.
At least don't, like, look, man, wrestling fans, there's a lot of heavier wrestling fans. They spread out. Their bodies spread out.
Yeah, the chairs were...
I'm not saying I'm thin, man.
The chairs were packed in really tight.
They were packed in really tight.
They were.
And there was no padding.
No.
Oh, my God. It was just a nightmare. Anyways.
We have video questions.
Okay, so to answer the question, I would be more excited for a movie. This guy would not be.
No, I wouldn't feel like I got my value if it was a movie.
You want best value.
I do.
All right.
I mean, we paid for floor seats. I want best value.
I know. We get to see the Titantron really good.
Oh, dear. That's not the difference from me watching it at home.
I don't really care to see Randy versus Bray.
I don't either. That's why they should have had this match on SmackDown.
Hey, Patrick Spark sent us a video question.
He did.
Let's see what Patrick has to say.
Hey, friendos, Pat here. Got to make this quick. I'm at work. So, the other day you were talking about transitional champions, and that made me think. Who is the worst transitional champion of all time? And what is the best example you can think of a transitional champion who didn't deserve to be a transitional champion and was turned into a full-time good champion, to say. Thanks, Rendos. Bye.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick.
Get back to work, Patrick. Let's see here. So the worst transitional champion.
Bob Backlund.
He
beat Bret Hart for the belt, and then a matter of, I think, days later, Diesel beat him for it at a house show.
Okay, well, I know you'll agree with me on this one. Do you think that David Arquette or Vince Russo were transitional champions?
I wouldn't necessarily...
They were like plot devices, not necessarily transitional.
Well, they were just trying to pop mainstream, at least in David Arquette's case, pop mainstream attention. Transitional champion is basically when you don't want the person who has it to lose it to someone else, so you book someone else to win it in between.
That's true.
Usually,
that's
true. Like, if you want a face has a belt,
that's
you want
true.
Another
okay,
face
no, you're
get
right,
the belt.
You're right. Okay, you're
good. Book it on a heel for a short run so that another face can take it off.
Bob took it from Brett.
Yes.
And then Diesel took it from him.
Yeah.
You're right. Okay. Now, this is the next one that's kind of interesting. Who is a transitional champ who ended up being a quality champ? Here's going to be my answer to this. Bret Hart. If you look at Bret Hart's, and I think I actually stole this point of view from Reddit.
Is this his 97 run?
When he originally got the belt.
Oh, okay.
And he originally won it from like Ric Flair and was untelevised or
that.
I don't think they ever really envisioned Bret Hart as a true champion guy. I think they always envisioned him as a transitional champ. And then he just stumbled his way into being. And look, my opinion and your opinion notwithstanding, plenty of people out there disagree with our opinion that he was an overrated champion.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and so because of that, I'm going to give him his credit and say that, okay, he was a true champion. He was a true top of the card main event champion. I think he kind of just defaulted his way into real champion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he started off as transitional champion.
Could be.
So that's my answer for that one.
I was trying to think of some other transitional champions that actually enjoyed some pretty good runs.
I mean, Alberto Del Rio, he was a champion. He was a transitional champion pretty much every time he got that belt.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't really decent. You know, it's still a bummer about him.
Yeah, I'm kind of drawing a blank on the second part of the question.
Because, yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know of anybody who just sort of surprisingly had a good title. The Miz, maybe. The Miz wasn't as bad as a main event champion as I think a lot of people, even myself, have knocked him for.
Yeah, I think it was just WrestleMania 27 that kind of sullied his run.
Because they basically just used him to get The Rock over.
Yeah.
The Rock Cena over.
What about Sid?
He was never a transitional
champion. He was.
For who?
When The Undertaker beat him at 13.
Who did Sid win the belt off of?
It was that weird match, I think.
That's right. And it was on Raw, wasn't it? He beat Bret Hart?
No. It was. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like a steel cage? Was that the Four Corners match or no?
It was after the Four Corners match, okay. I think. So I think Bret won it at the four-way match, and then Sid won it off him.
That Raw. WrestleMania literally was just a glorified Raw.
Pretty much.
So bad. So bad.
Vic Holland.
Let's see what Vic has to say.
My question for the show is... In the event that they decide to consolidate the belts back down to a world title, a mid-card title, a women's title, and a tag team title, what belts would you want to see? Say you're a belt mark or a belt snob, what belts would you want to see come from that consolidation, be the result of it? Mine would be the Undisputed title, because it's the Undisputed title, it's beautiful. The Intercontinental title, because it has more history than the U.S. title. A hybrid of the two women's titles. I'd have it basically be a purple backsplash instead of a blue or a red, because Raw plus SmackDown equals purple. I think that's a good look. I know you hate purple, Steve. I apologize for that, but that's just my take. And on the tag team titles, I kind of want the ones from the 80s and the Attitude Era back, because it was just, in my opinion, cool, and I associate that with great tag team wrestling. Anyway, would love to hear your take. Thank you very much. See you later.
Thank you, Vic.
Thanks, Vic. Okay, so we're consolidating the belts.
So there's one world title, either or one mid-card title.
He just wants to know what they look like.
Yeah, I know. Or what version of those belts.
Yeah.
I was just listing the belts that we were talking about.
Okay, so let's go to the world. So worlds, we're conglomerating the Universal title and world titles?
Yeah. Okay. I want the WWE title with the eagle on it.
Do you like the eagle belt?
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with the eagle belt?
Mid-card title.
Well, hold on a second.
What?
I don't want the eagle belt. You do, and I think that's a good answer.
It's a great answer.
Say, I like the – you know what looked really good the other day? I'm sorry, not the other day. When we were at the WWE Superstore, somebody had Warrior's belt, the eagle one, but it had a teal.
Oh, the teal strap.
Teal strap.
Yeah.
Oh, it looked like candy. I wanted to eat that thing.
Okay.
It looked great. That's what I want.
So you do want the eagle belt.
The eagle belt with my teal strap.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mid-card belt.
Mid-card belt. Will obviously be the Intercontinental Championship.
Why?
Because it's got the lineage.
Everybody says that.
It's got a great lineage.
So the U.S. Championship has a pretty decent lineage, too.
It's got Magnum TA and a lot of Sting.
A lot of Ric Flair, too.
Yeah, but Ric Flair, we got the big gold belt for him. We don't need his lineage.
A lot of Diamond Dallas Page. Raven.
Next. Oh, you know what's sad? As I was watching Sold Out the other day, I told you this, right? I was watching Sold Out.
Yeah.
And this one, Hogan came down. But it was also the one where DDP and Benoit and Raven were fighting over the U.S. title. And it was where DDP, at one point, they turned the camera on him, and he was on the ramp doing an army crawl. And, like, Heenan just said, well, he's making good time.
I remember that.
I was going to screenshot it for you and send it to you.
I remember that.
It happened too quick. I always thought they cut back a couple more times, but they didn't. It was just once.
That's funny.
Yeah, it was great. So you have a case. Should you?
I think the Intercontinental title is a better looking belt, so I'll go with that anyways.
What if you conglomerate? What if you join their lineages?
Okay, what would we call this belt?
Well, yeah, you'd have to call it the North and Intercontinental. United Intercontinental Championship.
Isn't the Intercontinental title for North and South America?
North and South America. So it would be this is still the Intercontinental Championship. Yeah. Oh man, the women. What would the women's belt look like?
I think the one on they have now on Raw.
You like that one?
Yeah.
I would do this. I would do the same thing. I would keep the white strap, but give it a black backplate.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Okay.
I think it looks really cool. And I don't like purple. Vic, I don't like purple. I don't like purple. That cruiserweight belt's ugly as crap.
That's funny because when they first debuted it, you really liked it.
Yeah, I know. I'm complicated like that.
I know. Tag team titles.
Have there ever been like really good tag team titles?
Not iconic, I don't think.
The NXT ones where they fit into each other.
Yeah, those were good.
I'll do those ones. Make them the NXT titles.
Cruiserweight title.
Same thing, but that Photoshop we saw where somebody made the strap black.
Yeah, that was great.
That looked cool.
That was good. All right, next, Michael Berry.
Michael Berry.
What's going on, friendos? It's your boy Michael Berry here doing his first video question. Even though being a $20 patron for about 2 weeks now and just missing the links and you guys being at WrestleMania and stuck in traffic right now. But yeah, I've been wanting to ask this question for a while and tell a bit of a story almost. But, you know, a pretty big indie star in my eyes, the Adam Hangman Page, a man whose gimmick is centered around hanging people. Pretty sure it's not common knowledge, but he was actually a graphic design teacher for a high school. Not just any high school, but he was actually my graphic design teacher. And got to see him live here recently. And phenomenal athlete, but I just thought it was really funny that a guy that hangs people as his gimmick was a teacher for high schoolers. Thought I'd pose the question to you guys. What is the weirdest job a wrestler has had before success? Thank you, friendos.
Thank you, Michael Berry.
Thank you, Michael Berry. Weirdest job wrestlers have before finding success. Shit, I didn't do any research for this one.
Nor did I.
Okay, let's think about other wrestlers and what we know they did. Didn't AJ Styles, like, what did he say in that podcast? Didn't he do, like, delivery service of some sort? I don't remember now.
I don't remember either.
Crap. A lot of wrestlers were bouncers. Scott Hall was a bouncer at a strip club.
Yes.
What? Let me ask you this. So we know like Matt Stryker was a teacher. Shane Douglas was a teacher.
Well, Shane was a teacher after he retired, right?
I thought he was one before. Oh, Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I don't know. What other job? I'm trying to think of other wrestlers. So many of them start out so early in life. Jericho, Owens started early. Stone Cold, I think he started pretty early. Triple H started pretty early.
Yeah. I'm just trying to run through the...
I mean, a bunch more football players.
Documentary.
I think bouncer to strip club, like if I had to choose one, bouncer to strip club would be cool.
Okay.
That'd be pretty neat.
Yeah.
Probably meet a lot of interesting characters and see boobies. And accidentally shoot somebody. Let's see here. Adam Mayhem has a question. I love Adam Mayhem. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, friendos. Adam Mayhem here. Just waiting to go to work. So I got a quick question. I saw this on another channel's podcast type thing. And they mentioned how, like, there was a question about should the WWE have an off season like every other major sport has. So, and I was thinking maybe, yeah, right? Like, you can take off like from, let's say, SummerSlam until like December or something like that, you know, so people can, you know, rest their injuries and like the feuds can, you know, just like revamp it, and when we go back it's like Road to WrestleMania and everything is great. So, and then during that time, you know, you can just like work with the UK people or anybody else. Anyway, my question is, if there was an off season for WWE and you were in charge of putting that together, how would you do it? And which months would you take off? Or would it be like rotating a roster or however? So that's my question. How would you do a WWE off season if you do it? Thanks, Randos.
Thank you, Adam Mayhem.
Will you trade? Can Adam Mayhem be part of the Superstar mix-up?
No.
No?
Too late.
I want him on WGPW.
Well, you know you had him at one point. I think you already traded him to me.
Top star. He could is. Be Adam.
I have
put
plans.
Put pressure on this guy.
I have plans for him.
You could be
him.
Top star on my brand.
I have plans for him. To answer his question, yes, they should have an offseason, but it shouldn't. I don't think it should work like other sports, though.
No.
Everybody should have a designated, I don't know, 2 to 4 week period of taking time off.
2 to 4 week?
Yeah.
I'd say 2 to 4 months. Throughout the year?
Well, I mean...
Like stagger their feuds.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So that people can take time off
yes.
in between feuds.
Yes. Individual wrestlers should have an offseason.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think...
like you go through two feuds, you take... A month off.
Yeah.
You go through another feud, you take 2 weeks off.
And
stuff
can,
like that.
You can make allowances for, you know, so, as long as a really long title reign is going really well, you don't want to disrupt it, work that out.
Mm-hmm.
But for, you know, everybody else, individual offseason. I think Brian Zane, Wrestling
I think
with Regret, did
yeah.
a really interesting video on that where he yeah. actually mapped out schedules and stuff. So
yeah.
check that out.
Adam Fella here with another video question.
Hey, friendos, your Stardew Valley champion, Adam Fella here, returning for another video question early in the morning with my breakfast. Anyway, WWE and pretty much all of wrestling has had its share of bad gimmicks. The Red Rooster, Shockmaster, so on, right? So my question is, if you were to have a modern-day WWE wrestler... and completely rebrand them with a bad gimmick, like Repo Man or something like that, who would you choose and what would the gimmick be? Mine would be Baron Corbin, but give him a more like Bill and Ted personality. Thanks, friendos. Take care.
Thank you, Adam Fella.
Thank you, Adam Fella, for your video question. I love, by the way, Baron Corbin and the Bill and Ted gimmick. I literally laughed. I watched that video while crapping,
excellent.
And I laughed.
Be excellent.
Be excellent to each other. Because Baron Corbin. Rebrand a current WWE wrestler with a bad gimmick. You know what one of my pet peeves is?
What?
Being interrupted. A lot of people close to me in my life interrupt me, like you interrupt me. My wife sometimes has a bad habit of interrupting me. People interrupt me all the time. Can't stand it. I want to rebrand.
Oh, how about this?
Go ahead.
No, never mind.
I want to rebrand. Who, like, people interrupt each other all the time. I want somebody to interrupt other people.
I got it.
Okay, go ahead.
I want this gentleman here.
Silas Young.
With TJ Perkins gimmick.
Yeah. That's good. Because in like 8 years, that's what he's going to be. That's really good. I like that. Silas Young as millennial guy who dabs.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's perfect. That's good.
What were you saying about interrupting?
I don't know. I was going to use that as a gimmick, but I don't like it now. Instead, I'm going to say... AJ Styles as a guy who has a stuttering issue.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to do.
So that wasn't that a Bubba Ray's gimmick in...
Oh, shit. You're right. It's already been done.
Yeah.
AJ Styles as... commentator who's bullied too much. You know, WWE does that crap. They like take stuff like people are like, you know, giving them shit about something and then they'll turn that into a gimmick, like Right to Censor.
I know.
So dumb.
It is.
I hate when they do that stuff.
Alexander Corrente.
Let's see what Alexander Corrente has to say.
Too sweet, guys. I think The Miz benefited the most from the draft when it came to revitalizing his career. So which superstar tag team, whoever you think from each brand, is going to benefit the most like The Miz did? I think on SmackDown, Sami Zayn, I think he's going to have more success than he had on Raw. And on Raw, I think the person with the biggest chance to benefit from the shakeup was someone indirectly affected by the shakeup. I think it's going to be Samoa Joe. Slow start to his career, but now that the rosters are set, I think he's going to be able to really branch out and have some great rivalries. Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Alexander.
Interesting question here. So he got this question to us before our countouts last weekend.
Yes.
So we actually did winners and losers.
But individual wrestlers.
Individual wrestlers.
I don't know if we really discussed in detail who, brand-wise, won the shakeup, though.
Oh, was that his question?
No, I don't know. I'm just taking a different avenue to things rather than rehashing what we did for Countout.
SmackDown one. Oh, my God.
Yeah, SmackDown one.
Yeah, SmackDown one. No, he points out Samoa Joe, which is actually a good point. We didn't make that. I don't think we had
as a winner?
Yeah. He's like only the, like when you think of heels, all you think of is on Raw, Samoa Joe, SmackDown, Baron Corbin. That's pretty much, well, before gender. Like, that's all you think of.
Owens is on SmackDown.
So Samoa Joe, yeah, I know, but he's too entertaining to be heel. Samoa Joe is like true heel on Raw with a bevy of faces. That's
true.
A good point.
That's true.
But okay, so my question, like to piggyback onto his, is have our opinions changed in the week, in the two episodes we've seen?
Oh, as far as individual winners and losers?
Yeah, since Countout. Like, seeing one episode of each brand, has our opinion changed at all?
I need to pull up the lists.
Like, obviously, Jinder Mahal would probably be on the winner's list.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Mojo, was Mojo on our list?
He was on neither list.
So Mojo got some good screen time. He was in the six-pack challenge anyway.
Yeah, but he won the Battle Royal before
that's
the
true. That's
shake
a good
up,
point.
So
yeah.
That push was already more or less established.
Yeah. Dean Ambrose and The Miz, they're just doing that thing, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know if they'd be... I don't know if Dean would be a winner now.
Yeah, I'm not sure, man. Especially now that people are calling him lazy.
I'd probably take Kevin Owens off the loser list.
Yeah,
but
probably.
But it was always like a
it was conditional.
A tentative.
It was conditional. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gallows and Anderson, we had no idea the Revival were going to get hurt.
True.
So they're winners.
Well, they are at least not number one losers.
True, yeah.
So yeah, we might make some changes.
Yeah, here and there.
All right, one more video question from Jordan Carter.
All right, thank you, Jordan. Let's see what he has to say now.
Hey, friendos. So with Shibata getting a brain injury and Hanma getting paralyzed a couple months ago, do you think that we can see New Japan maybe change the rules of moves that are allowed in ring or any sort of wrestler safety like we've seen in WWE over the past couple of years? Let me know what you think. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you, Jordan.
I like to hope so. I mean, the Hanma injury.
That was, yeah.
That just seemed like a fluke thing because, you know, that's, in these days, a pretty standard move, the draping DDT.
Yeah, and on top of that, yeah, they do that in the WWE. I don't know what anybody was ever thinking letting that headbutt happen. Like, because he did that a little while ago. I don't know how often Shibata's done that because obviously
he did it in a match against Ishii, right? Someone put a GIF up of it. Is it GIF or GIF?
GIF.
I've heard both.
Yeah, I know, but remember, like, the dude who created it?
But I thought GIF. Then that was, that's not, I don't know. I thought I heard that wasn't the case anymore. I don't know.
Oh, I thought you and I have always called it GIF.
No, well, we didn't, we did.
I prefer GIF.
I do, too. We called it, we only started calling it GIF after we heard about the guy who invented it, said it was pronounced GIF.
Yeah.
But maybe things have changed. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Anyway, I saw one where some dude collapsed. You would like to think that they would. You would like to think that they would say, hey, number one, no headbutts. I cringe whenever I see, and the matches don't need them. Okada, in both the Shibata match and the Kenny Omega match, have taken these bumps on, like, his neck.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Everything lands right here. His entire body weight is right here.
Yeah.
And they look horrible.
Mm-hmm.
He did it in Shibata, he did it in Omega.
Mm-hmm.
They look horrible. I don't want to see that. I don't need to see that. It doesn't enhance the match. I don't know if part of the popularity of New Japan these days in their homeland is wrestlers putting their bodies at risk. I don't know if that's part of the appeal for the public buying tickets. I don't know.
I don't know either.
If it is, I think they'd be hard-pressed to really change much. If it's not, I imagine they would change some things. The dude's career is over, by all accounts.
Potentially, yeah.
Potentially. That's, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good.
No.
That headbutt was nasty.
It was.
Like, to headbutt somebody and then blood, that's dark. That's messed up.
And to be, you know, the Wrestling Observer a couple times mentioned that he had at least partial paralysis on one side of his body. I think once the hemorrhaging started.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, in the newsletter this week, they talked about not just, you know, the headbutt, but also the compounding effect of that plus dehydration.
Because the match is like 40 minutes long.
Yeah, and that was towards the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that compounded the extent of the injury or not.
Yeah.
But it's a high price to pay for a headbutt spot
Dude,
in a
I
match.
Know, man, I know. And could have done without it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess you would think that, yeah, look, they're human beings. Like, you would think that, yes, they would change things up. Now, I would think that, so, like, with the WWE, they got the concussion lawsuit, and it was either that or the idea of kids doing it where the curb stomp was taken out of the equation.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, I'm not sure culturally where wrestling stands there, or if as a culture they're as sensitive to that kind of stuff as, like, because sometimes, like, I don't know. I a whole debate could be opened up over whether or not American culture is, like, too sensitive to things like, oh, well, we can't do this because kids might emulate this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have no idea where the Japanese culture stands on that.
I don't know either.
And so I don't know if they would take things out of the equation that kids might try to do at home.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would have no idea. I would hope that they would keep at least the health of their wrestlers in mind when potentially banning any things. I mean, I posed the question 2 weeks ago. Why is it that Shibata is a guy who can get away with stiff work and, like, some and other people don't have that same license? Why isn't everybody running around throwing stiff shots?
I don't know. It might, you know, just, I mean, be, it might, I don't know if it's whether,
hey, your style works, so you can do this.
Or I don't know if it's necessarily a licensed wrestler to wrestler. Maybe some wrestlers just don't want to work that way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll find out though. I mean, over the next couple months, we'll see if
they, well, we have up on the we have two more New Japan shows coming up. End of this month. I think there's one on the 29th, another one on May 3rd, I want to say.
So we'll find out at least some
in a couple weeks.
Some glimpse into see, and I'm sure Meltzer seems to be very well in tuned with the New Japan scene, so maybe we'll get some word from him.
Yes.
I don't know. Anyways, that's it for Dirt Sheet. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.